News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. That's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. And a familiar voice on Tuesdays that we were hoping to have on, is on every Tuesday at this time, is not going to make it because evidently Quinn Hilliard lost his voice over the weekend shouting at the Saints or something like that. The Saints and the Titans took away Quinn's voice.
I feel partially guilty for that.
Yeah. Your team.
My team destroyed his team.
That terrible field. What's the deal with growing grass in Tennessee? Like, University of Tennessee's got a crappy field, and then the Titans, they got all kinds of problems on that field.
Well, we don't have to get into it, but the Titans are allowing a Major League Soccer team to use their home stadium. So
I
think that probably, and Tennessee State uses their stadium, so maybe too many.
Overuse?
Maybe overuse, yeah.
Okay, I know it was an issue on Sunday.
Yeah, it was an issue for the Saints, that's for sure.
And do we need to talk about college football the day before? So, anyway, Quinn can't make it today. But I was reading an article that you know, got a lot of attention on Twitter, wouldn't you say?
Yes. The headline, Quinn wrote this, and I wanted to talk with Quinn about it this morning. We'll have to, I guess, push it back to later this week if he's available or next week. But he wrote, "Don't cry for Kenosha killer Kyle Rittenhouse." And basically makes the argument that Rittenhouse, that vigilantism is bad. That's the premise of Quinn's argument.
Yeah, and that Rittenhouse, a lot of his actions were bad. That it was nighttime, right? It was all at nighttime. So here's some of Quinn's arguments about Rittenhouse. He drove without a license, carried a weapon illegally, volunteered to protect a business he needed a GPS to find on a map, and whose owner didn't even know him and what didn't ask for his help. The first person that Quinn says, the first man Rittenhouse killed was a homeless man who ran at him yelling curses and threats while throwing at him an empty plastic bag. So I guess what Quinn is saying right there is that was not much of a threat. I want you to answer all these points as we go along here. After killing him, Rittenhouse ran down the street with several people in a furious pursuit. So he shoots the homeless man. Now people are chasing him. And he tripped and fell, and what happened next is a matter of dispute and differing interpretations. One more man died, another was shot in the arm, after which Rittenhouse quickly and admirably turned himself into police. So, what's your reply to what Quinn writes here?
In fairness to Quinn, he wrote this article 6 days ago. It came out November 10th, so more has come out in the trial since he wrote this article.
Right, he was talking about that interpretation there, what happened next after the first death of the man who was running at Rittenhouse.
So,
the guy's running at him. Does he have to shoot him? I guess that's number one.
And so, Quinn wrote, he broke numerous laws leading up to the killings. First off, that was part of the reason that they're having this trial. It hasn't been, it hasn't been confirmed that he broke the laws. That's the rules. Mm-hmm. That's up to the jury, right? And they've already decided, since Quinn wrote this article, to drop two of the charges, one being the curfew charge that said that Rittenhouse was out past the city-enforced curfew. Well, the prosecution was unable to prove that there was an actual curfew that night, so the judge dropped that charge. And, even still, everyone that was out there that night was breaking the curfew rule, right? And so if they enforced that, there would have been tens of thousands of people locked up last year during those riots. The second one, carrying a weapon illegally, that charge was dropped yesterday. I mean, they even broke out the tape measure to see how long the barrel was on that rifle that Rittenhouse was carrying. So that charge was dropped.
He could not have carried a handgun, right?
That
would have been illegal.
I believe that's what the rule was.
And Rittenhouse, right, he testified that he took the rifle because he knew that was legal.
Yeah, and I've made it clear, and I think most people would agree that if that were your child, 17-year-old, you would not want him going into that situation, right? I mean, 17 is awfully young. The more I've read about Rittenhouse, and I know, and Quinn got, by the way, absolutely destroyed online for this. They talk about getting ratioed on Twitter. Because you can do three things to a tweet. You can like it, you can retweet it, or you can comment on that tweet. And they say someone's ratioed when there are a lot more comments than there are likes or retweets.
Mm-hmm.
Because, if someone likes what you're saying, they would retweet it or push the heart button.
Sure.
If they don't like what you're saying, they're going to argue with you. So first off, Quinn got hammered on Twitter for this take. But the more I read about Rittenhouse's family and how untruthful the media has been about this from the very beginning. So if you think back to when that happened in Kenosha, I mean, let's just start with what began this whole thing. And I know there were all kinds of racial riots last year. Some, certainly, people were justified in protesting.
Protesting, of course. Rioting, no.
This was about Jacob Blake, remember?
Yes.
And a young black man that was killed. But the reason he was killed, remember, he was...
Was he killed or was he shot and injured?
That's a great point.
I think he
was shot a bunch and ended up living. That's
maybe
right.
Alive.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But he was accosting a former rape victim of his. Remember, it was an incredibly dangerous situation. He pulled a knife on the police, tried to steal a vehicle with a child inside. That's what led into this shooting, okay? And then the media, MSNBC, CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, grabbed onto this just like they've done so many other stories and made it an issue of police needing to be reformed and this being an entirely racial situation. Not even taking into account how bad the guy is that they're stumping for here in this Jacob Blake.
That's been the case in a number of the cases. You had somebody who had a criminal element to him.
And then just like that kid that was in Washington who was wearing the MAGA hat a few years ago, and then the was it Native Americans or whoever it was that got in his face?
Yes.
And this entire premise was set up by the media to make this young kid look like, you know, a demon, basically. And then as the facts came out, he was actually standing there. Was he trying to provoke something? Who knows? But in that instance, he was right where he was.
Well, he was wearing a MAGA hat.
And he was traveling with a high school.
Catholic high school out of Cincinnati.
And he became the bad guy. So, you know, fast forward to Kenosha, and Rittenhouse is out there with the weapon, and he's painted in this terrible light. Like, he became the face of white supremacy for the Biden campaign. They used him in ads to run for president. Put this kid square in the middle of their ad pre-trial. He hadn't even been to trial. That's what's going on right now. So they also didn't talk about the fact that, okay, he crossed state lines. Well, he lived, what, 20, 30 miles from Kenosha?
Like going from, and I'm not defending anybody here, but the facts are, because I'm all about the facts, not the emotion. The emotion's getting way in the way of all this. So it would be basically going from Pascagoula to downtown Mobile.
Right, so he crossed state lines. Well, how many of those rioters that night didn't cross state lines? I imagine a lot of them came from Chicago.
Or other parts,
exactly.
Across the country.
And then it also comes out, I'm finding out in this trial that that Rittenhouse's father lived in Kenosha. And also, it doesn't matter in the case of this trial, but to kind of picture why Rittenhouse felt like he should have been in Kenosha, I guess, is because, well, his family sounds like he came from an incredibly broken family. Like, his dad got wrapped up in the opioid crisis and was terrible to his mom, from things I've read. His mom went bankrupt at some point and was having trouble putting food on the table for their kids. And he was coming from an incredible, harsh home life, even if the media wants to paint him as some, you know, spoiled, rich, white kid. It's not the case. He loved, apparently, police and firefighters. These are the people he looked up to, you know, law enforcement, people that are trying to do the right thing for America. I think the reason he went to Kenosha, beyond being invited by a car dealership to protect their cars. Now, they are denying that they asked these people to come protect their cars, but they were kind of, you know, it seems like they're maybe that car dealership is trying to avoid a little bit of liability.
I would say so.
In this instance, but you can't say that the city was willing to protect their businesses and their people in Kenosha. They didn't call the National Guard out until the next day after this shooting happened. And the police were standing on the sidelines as all of this was happening, as precincts were being lit on fire. I was rewatching some video from that night in Kenosha this week, and you had car lots going up in fire. You had police departments going up in fire. You had all kinds of things going on. And the guy that actually lived after being shot by Rittenhouse, if you watched the prosecution's defense in this case of the person that was shot by Rittenhouse, he was saying, okay, so he lit a trailer on fire. He did this, but that's not worth his not worth being shot. Okay, he said the N-word. So you have the quote-unquote good guys, according to the media here, and the good guy who lived, who was shot in the arm by Rittenhouse, was a white man using the N-word and basically setting this city on fire. But because of this twisted story that they've kind of, you know, twisted themselves into, the left, especially mm-hmm. in the media, they have to paint that guy in a good light. When the guy that's being painted as the terrible guy, by so many accounts to this point, was trying to protect a city that was not being protected by law enforcement and that the city did not call National Guard in for. And then to dispute that he didn't, you know, have to fear for his life. The homeless guy that Quinn was referencing all night was talking about killing people and going after people.
So probably a deranged homeless guy.
Well, and is he homeless? I mean, I need to find that story to see and whether that makes a difference or not. But you had one witness that showed up that said, yeah, I was there. And this guy said that if he found me or if he found someone else that he was alone, that he was going to kill him that night. And he said Rittenhouse was there when this guy was making that threat. So then fast forward.
But Rittenhouse had the gun and the guy had a paper bag.
Well, did he have the paper bag or what? I don't know what he had on him, but he chased Rittenhouse mm-hmm. at one point. That's pretty clear in the video that he was chasing down Rittenhouse. And Rittenhouse was running away, barrel pointed down, from this guy. And there were shots that were fired.
Right.
And Rittenhouse didn't know if people were shooting at him or exactly what was happening. But he had this guy hot on his tail and turns around and fires and puts him down. That was the first guy that was killed.
Then he's being chased and then he falls.
Well, after that, he falls. And the video and pictures were clear as day from that. A guy with a skateboard was beating him with said skateboard. He ends up shooting him also. And then the third guy, which was the one who actually made it up onto the stand, was actually carrying a weapon of his own. And pointed it at Rittenhouse and admitted to pointing it at Rittenhouse before Rittenhouse fired and shot 90% of his bicep off of his arm. So the media, they're not kind of like Jacob Blake, you know, certain things are able to be used and not used in trial. And we aren't the jury here, right? So we can kind of talk about the pasts of these people. I mean, the first guy he killed has a rap sheet a mile long of pedophilia, mm-hmm. right? So not a good guy. And if you, I don't know what's allowed or not allowed to be included in a case, but if you're just being chased by someone who doesn't have a rap sheet, I'd say maybe you're less scared for your life than someone. And Rittenhouse didn't know this dude's rap sheet either. But he was a bad dude.
Understood. He's 17 years old. He puts himself in the middle of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
He inserts himself into the most chaotic night in the history of that town, probably. Bad decision.
Yeah. Not illegal.
Not illegal. He when he is confronted he uses the gun at number of opportunities where there's some sort of confrontation. He uses the gun. He's got the gun. I'm not saying he's guilty. I'm just saying, look at all the decisions he made to put himself in that position where the night went haywire the way it did.
Right.
Now, that's not the law. That is not, you're right about, and I'm all for that. What is the law? What are the laws that he broke? Was he threatened to the degree where he was just protecting himself? That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I agree. Look, what you say about the media coverage, not painting a clear picture of who the victims in the shootings were, trying to simply demonize Rittenhouse, I get it. I agree 100%. That's why a lot of this country's got a distorted view of this whole thing.
And with, you know, Quinn's argument that's anti-vigilantism, and that's the route the White House has taken now, that he shouldn't have been a vigilante. Well,
yeah.
Why not when the police aren't standing up for you, when your government leaders aren't standing up and protecting a city that he apparently loved? Why is being a vigilante bad in that instance?
Hit us up on the text line or call 251-343-0106. Good morning, y'all. Dan and Dalton, 826 FM Talk 106.5. Tuesday morning when we normally talk to Quinn Hillier, but Quinn has lost his voice. My guess is cheering the Kamara-less Saints onto a loss up in Tennessee.
Yeah, so Quinn texted, and I do want to clear a couple things up. Quinn texted, you guys are missing the entire point of what I wrote. Well, we're discussing this Rittenhouse trial. He said, you guys are missing the entire point of what I wrote. I made a clear distinction between whether he is legally guilty and whether he bears moral responsibility. My argument was entirely the latter. He said, you shouldn't argue against my piece without me being able to explain it. Being a vigilante is always bad. That's what Quinn said.
Well, Quinn, you know, I don't think we need to apologize for talking about your piece that you're not here. I mean, across the country, you wrote an article that got published basically all over the internet. So, you know, we enjoy having you on Tuesday. Sorry you can't be here today. I don't think we have to apologize for conversing about an article. Once you put it out there, it's out there.
Yeah,
I would think, you know, if you could, how many other talk shows have quoted or debated that article since it came out? I mean, he's a well-known writer, and his opinions are going to mean something to more than just the two of us.
And I would much rather be talking with Quinn about this than about the piece.
Yeah.
But if the argument is that he bears more responsibility, I mean, I think some people, maybe Rittenhouse, can live with that, right? If the alternative is to just let people run roughshod over a community that you feel is partially yours to protect, mm-hmm. I understand and I agree that vigilantism has caused a lot of problems over the year. I think we're seeing a lot of that here in Mobile with a lot of these shootings that are going on because these bad people are being let out on the street on bond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I had to guess, now this is all my opinion, I think a lot of these shootings are because folks feel that if they've been done wrong by some of these people, that the state, that the city's not going to take care of it, so they go and try to take care of business themselves.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it just spirals you into a big problem.
Yeah.
As far as these are people that,
these are people that, as we talk to law enforcement here locally, these are people who, by and large, know each other.
Mm-hmm.
These are people with grudges and that sort of thing.
Right.
And people who are, many are convicted of very violent crimes to start with, happen to be out on the street.
Now, and my response to the White House, because, and this isn't necessarily just a response to Quinn's piece, but the White House now circling in on the term vigilante, is vigilantism always bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't want to see it. You would rather see law enforcement, you would rather see paid professionals do their job. But last summer, these paid professionals were not doing their job. The police were sitting by as Kenosha was burning to the ground. The National Guard had not yet been called in, from everything I can read from last year. And this was after a summer of incredibly intense riots across mm-hmm. America, where I'm sure Rittenhouse, if he was watching the news like everyone else, saw other cities burning to the ground. So at some point, I think as an American, you have to say, you know, am I just going to stand by? Not even as an American, as a citizen of a place
of
you love.
Yeah.
Now, I know, Rittenhouse, cross state lines, whatever. But his dad lived there. Who knows what he felt about the town of Kenosha? But when no one else is standing up to protect what you've got, and he didn't just pull up and start shooting people.
No, he did not. But in the end, he did. I mean, in the end, confrontation turned into death. And then, now a jury's talking about all that.
Yeah.
And I get your point completely. It's a very frustrating time. And we're lucky things did not explode here in Mobile. I can tell you that. 830 FM Talk 106.5.
Thank you, Kane. 835 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile. Mornings, the lead-in to the Jeff Poor Show. This segment brought to you by Tobias McCormick & Comer, a local law firm based right here in Mobile, Alabama. You know, I've gotten several times to talk in studio with Desi Tobias and Brian Comer, a couple really good guys, and, you know, they take what they do seriously and absolutely love their jobs and what they're doing for people out there. Tobias McCormick & Comer is Mobile-based, and they're known for their effective and compassionate representation. You know, they have more than 70 years of combined experience at TMC, so they're well-positioned and committed to securing the best legal outcomes for those who need the skill and compassion of their firm. They've been successful in representing injured maritime workers, including seamen and shipyard workers, and numerous cases involving catastrophic injury and death, but they represent victims in all manner of personal injuries. And for a free consultation, you can call them today or any day, 251-432-5001. That's 251-432-5001, or visit them online, tmclawyers.com.
Interesting lineup on Jeff's show today. Includes Dan Gaynor with the Media Research Group, and he also is a contributor to Fox News. But I'm most interested, I believe, in this lineup that I see today with the, right around 10:30, Tim James. Will he or won't he? You know, he's like Ziegler with a lot of money. He hasn't said he's running for governor, but hasn't he thrown some breadcrumbs out there? I don't know. Anyway, what's he Why is he making the talk show rounds?
Mm-hmm.
I got some sort of plans. What does he call
it? Well, you know, the Jeff Poor Show is where they come to announce.
Absolutely. Yeah, so anyway, it just says businessman Tim James. Will we know him as businessman Tim James in a little bit of time? So anyway,
unfortunately, that will be a line never put before my name. Businessman.
Businessman Dalton Orwig.
It's just not in the cards for me.
To announce he's running for governor. Was the guy's name Dalton? I was giving you a hard time back in our offices, that the young guy.
Yeah,
that,
there's a lot of Daltons around.
So the Dalton that is like the head of the young Republicans in Alabama.
Disputes, I think, yeah. Never met him.
And I've just given you a hard time in front of everybody. Dalton, why can't you be more like him instead of cleaning up baby poop and just get out there and be a man of the people?
I don't know if that Dalton or other Daltons were, like me, named after Dalton from Roadhouse.
Right, maybe.
But it was all around the same time, I think.
In decades from now, or maybe sooner than that, young Daltons will have been named after you.
I seriously doubt
about that.
Seriously doubt it. Hey, by the way, Sean says on Midday Mobile today, Captain Paul Birch will be on. So that'll be well worth listening to. Remember, Paul Birch was one of the, well, his deputies were one of the first on the scenes at that shooting on Dolphin, right there near 65. So Paul Birch has had a front seat to a lot of this recent violent crime, and it'll be good to hear from him, from his point of view.
Okay.
Sean says, Dan, you said we were fortunate Mobile didn't explode. It comes down to tolerance. Our leaders wouldn't tolerate burning and looting like these liberal leaders up north. Now, as far as the recent violent crime, I'd say that's a major issue in Mobile. But a lot of that's it's not a lot of people going out together and rioting and burning down, you know, businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of last year, I kept saying this, and one video in particular during the rioting last year stuck in my mind. And in Pittsburgh, remember, everyone, if restaurants were open for a lot of last year in a lot of parts of the United States, people had to eat outside.
Mm-hmm.
They would set up tables outside.
That's right.
And I remember this video in Pittsburgh, I think, where you had this older group of people that were sitting at a table in Pittsburgh eating food, and these rioters came up and basically, you know, shoved all their food off the table and turned their table over and were verbally attacking these people to their faces and being completely, completely insane, to the point where I watched the video and I said, yeah, I'm not going down like that. If I'm sitting at a table with people and eating a meal and someone comes up and throws my beer to the ground and starts, you know, getting in my face, then sorry, I'm throwing down.
Yeah.
Like, that's just me. And I'm not trying to make a point either. But what I think is, I'm not alone, and maybe it's the region that we're in the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are carrying down here. I think the reason you've seen so much of this happening in Pittsburgh and some of these other cities is because, well, they're not scared of the threat of going after someone they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They probably have a pretty good feeling that whoever it is isn't carrying a weapon or for some reason or another can't fight back, so they're totally willing, these rioters, to walk up to their table and push their women to the side and throw things on the ground. That doesn't happen in Mobile because you don't know what that person at the table might be carrying on.
That's a good point. And as far as things escalating or not escalating in our city, look, tolerance, yes, I understand that. When you're, the actions of a city government almost invite that because of their inaction.
Yeah.
But there is a degree of luck involved, too, because anybody could do anything at any time, set things off, start the domino fall, and we simply didn't have that happen.
We didn't,
I think, you know, that's...
And the closest it came was when some protesters got up on I-10.
Right.
And that one female,
right,
you know, hit the police SUV
cruiser, right,
with a bat, and then she was immediately, or, you know, arrested and
mm-hmm.
just recently went to trial. Looking at some other texts here, check the definition of vigilante. Rittenhouse was not acting in the stead of law enforcement. And I did. I looked up vigilante last night as I was, you know, reading Quinn's piece and some other things. So here's the definition. Vigilante, a member of a self-appointed group of citizens who undertake law enforcement in their community without legal authority, typically because the legal agencies are thought to be inadequate. I'm not arguing that Rittenhouse wasn't being a vigilante that night. It sounds like that's exactly what he was being. But you look at the story of America and of free people, and sometimes over the course of America, it's come down to being
A vigilante.
A vigilante. And it's come down to protecting your people when the powers that be are afraid or unwilling to protect them. And I feel like, from all I've seen in this trial and all I've read about Rittenhouse, that that's what he was doing. Now, whether that's legal or not, that's for the courts to decide. But I feel that he felt pretty confident in what he was doing that night. Sam says, we're lucky things didn't explode here in Mobile, but I think the current environment is showing people are beginning to grow a lot more brazen. Who knows what will happen in the future with no fear of being caught? Pretty scary stuff. Jerry trying to lighten the mood with some Let's Go Brandon memes. And let's
see. Does that lighten the mood? <I don't know. laughs> Is that lightening the mood for any left listener right now?
Buford says, the reason the government comes down so hard on vigilantism is because it embarrasses them and points out the government's incompetence in protecting citizens, the sole basis for the government to exist. If the police were out there doing what they were supposed to do in Kenosha that night, I don't think it would have come to this.
But they were out there, but they weren't doing much,
they weren't
right?
doing much, but he had seen that happen in cities, you know, across America up to that point. And then, another person, vigilantism occurs when the police are incapable or don't do their jobs, and so on and so forth. So lots of good texts, and keep them coming, 343-0106.
I've got some good news. I think this is good. Well, I think it's undeniably good news for the city of Mobile. Airbus notched a mega order for 255 jets at the Dubai Air Show, bolstering the plane maker's case that aircraft demand has started back since the coronavirus pandemic. The deal for Airbus's larger A321 model is valued at more than $30 billion before typical industry discounts. It's going to be parceled out among a number of companies. Airbus is also in talks with Air Lease Corp for a major order that would include a mix of narrow and wide body jets. This is Bloomberg reporting this earlier, citing people familiar with the discussion. So this is according to sources kind of thing. Demonstrating sustained demand is a key part of Airbus's mission in Dubai. It issued a market forecast on Saturday showing little change in the 20-year outlook from before the pandemic. That's good news long range for Mobile, because the fact is the majority of these Indigo-ordered planes, guess what? They're going to be built right here in Mobile.
Yeah.
So that's a big order. You know, we hear often about the orders, national orders, federal orders, the Navy for what's going on in Austell.
Mm-hmm.
Here's great news for Airbus, and this is all from the private sector. They say, yeah, we want your planes. I know there was also a story earlier.
Yeah, the day prior.
And would this be that? Is this really a black mark against Airbus, or is it just that demand is so great, or how do you read it?
Well, you know, as far as stockholders are concerned, it doesn't really matter what else is happening industry-wide, but Airbus did come out on Sunday in a report and said that they're having trouble keeping up with demand.
Yeah.
So that's before the big news yesterday. And how about that? Something that's happening in Dubai at the Dubai Air Show, which I've never been to, but I imagine it's pretty ritzy, right? I mean, it's not like the Mobile Convention Center.
Well, everything is ritzy in Dubai.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it's in Dubai, it's ritzy.
But a move made there directly affects us in Mobile, and that's huge news.
Remember, it used to be the Paris Air Show where deals were.
Right,
we
would send our city council over for the Paris Air Show.
Mm-hmm.
So Airbus on Sunday, the news came out that just like so many others that are having issues on the supply chain, that Airbus is having those same problems and that they were not going to be able to reach the number of jets that they said that they would be able to build in a certain amount of time. Each Airbus aircraft, they said, has about 500,000 parts, and Airbus, across all of its factories, receives 1.7 million parts per day.
Wow.
Can you imagine what it's like to be working that Amazon route? Having to do
what a supply chain that's got to be met for Airbus to build any, for any manufacturer to build anything.
Mm-hmm.
Remember during the early part of the pandemic, I was trying to get a replacement part for my grill. I contacted the place. Yeah, we didn't make any last year.
Yeah.
That's my grill.
That didn't make the Wall Street Journal.
Dan's grill. Read more here. 846 FM Talk 106.5.
Thanks, Kane. 851 FM Talk 106.5. This segment of Mobile Mornings brought to you by our good friends at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and the crew doing fantastic work on both sides of the bay. And I've got this stack of customer reviews, people who have used 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they are all basically, you know, all altogether saying that 1-800-GOT-JUNK is a fantastic company, and they're very respectful. You know, they come onto your property, and they show that proper reverence when they show up, and they do a great job. And then after they're gone, it's like they were never there, you know, except for all the junk they removed from your home. So you know that they were there, but they don't leave much of a trace. It's a very easy service to use. They are about as local as you get, and the pricing is up front. What they quote you is what you'll end up paying. It's super convenient to set up a time to have 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out to your place of business or your residence and take care of that junk for you. And then I also love how responsibly they dispose of all the junk. You know, somebody that isn't 1-800-GOT-JUNK, some random dude you might pay to come take care of the junk, you don't know if he's going down the road and throwing it in the woods or what have you.
That's a good point. And they did some crucial work for me in May. I had to be out of town, and they took care of a lot of important stuff that I couldn't get to as we were selling the house. So Trey and the bunch, thank you very much.
Yeah, and you're not the only one here at FM Talk who have used 1-800-GOT-JUNK and have glowing reviews. So give them a call today and set up your appointment. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number. Or go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Want to go to the phone lines right now? Larry's on the line.
Yeah. Larry,
morning,
good
guys.
Morning. How are you, Larry?
Some of y'all stirred the pot on a little while ago. Was talking about the rioting and people not standing up for themselves in the South, not allowed. I was raised by a mom that, and dad. My dad was a farmer from Nebraska. My mom was raised in Birmingham, and I was basically told in school that you don't ever start a fight, but you better finish it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference between a lot of folks is people down here pretty easy to get along with until you get them stirred up. And when you get them stirred up, then you got a pot full.
That's a good point. You know, Larry, I'm from a different part of the country. I've lived down here for most of my life, but same thing with me is that would be probably mom and dad both, but my father with making sure that I completely understood the point, looked me in the eye and told me pretty much the same thing. And he extended it, Larry, to, like, if you see somebody getting picked on, like, he thought,
protect them.
Protect them as well.
Yeah.
And but thank you, Larry, and we appreciate you very much, man.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, and I was the same growing up, and I know I'm not alone. You know, I had a bully who I ended up becoming really good friends with. You know, people grow up and change. But
yes.
In, like, I want to say third grade, fourth grade, there was a bully in class.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have come home complaining about him a little far too often. And at one point, my dad said, listen, if he hits you, if he does anything else, you know what you got to do.
Yeah.
You got to go crazy on him.
Yeah.
And there's a difference in what's legally right and what's morally right.
Mm-hmm.
And the laws can change, and certainly people's morals change. But there are a lot of people down here, and I know across a lot of the country, but we have more of a congregation of people here who just aren't willing to stand for bullies in mm-hmm. some of the stuff that's going on in other cities. And I think, just like Larry said, a reason you're not seeing or didn't see the streets of Mobile on fire the way you saw the streets of Kenosha on fire is because there would have been a lot more Kyle Rittenhouses out there in Mobile than there were in Kenosha.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I believe, and I'll stand by it. Now, whether he broke any laws, that's for the courts to decide. But I feel like if that were happening in our city, a lot of people would feel just fine if they were going out to protect.
Well, let's just pray that it doesn't happen in our city.
And again,
that would not be, you know, you can't even paint that as the perfect circumstance. Certainly you stand up for yourself, but, you know, let's just not have it to start with.
And again, the situation is different. Our police show up mm-hmm. when that happens. You know, mm-hmm. they do, for the most part, what a community wants them to do, and that's to protect the community.
They've not been defunded.
No.
And, you know, I know we're working on ways to pay them more. Mayor Stimson was talking about that. He also talked about making sure that they feel honored and that they feel appreciated every day on the job. And I think that's something that the new Commissioner Prine is trying to do, too, is instill in them a sense of worthiness and a sense of honor and a sense that they are very appreciated mm-hmm. for the job that they do. And you see the back to blue signs all over Mobile,
yeah.
Signs and flags and bumper stickers and all that. And I think that sentiment is real and it's genuine.
So why don't we talk a little bit about this brewing situation at the White House as we wrap up the show?
Sure.
Because I think a lot of people saw this coming in 2020 when Kamala Harris was named the running mate for now President Joe Biden. And we talked a little bit yesterday about the report from CNN
mm-hmm.
that the two sides aren't necessarily happy with
each other
right now.
Right.
And CNN, apparently some of their journalists were not happy with the report that came out?
Left-leaning CNN has ticked somebody off, and it's left-leaning CNN. So they've got real quickly, they've got several liberal commentators on CNN very unhappy with the reporting because CNN broke that story, and I was really surprised by that because it wasn't flattering at all to Biden or Kamala Harris. Basically, broke the story about just that. There's a fracture between the two of them, and they just they were mad because the contributors were mad because it puts Kamala Harris
in a bad light.
Yeah. He said that's the last thing she needs. She's the first woman, first African American or woman of color to hold this office. So I guess we're just supposed to sanitize everything around her. But it was a CNN report.
Yeah. So the sources that spoke to CNN, the Biden side said they're not happy with the job Kamala is doing as vice president, and that she can't stick to task or something like that. And then Kamala's aides and sources were saying, well, Joe Biden's racist. Did you see the way he protected Buttigieg? And he doesn't do anything for Kamala Harris. So that was kind of the rift between the two. You mentioned yesterday, it's so similar to parody, literal parody, in that show on HBO, Veep, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And then yesterday this happened. So Biden rolls out the infrastructure bill, and Kamala comes up to talk beside him.
Please welcome Heather Kurtenbach.
In a moment.
So Biden was up there with Kamala Harris and a leader of a union, I believe, Heather Kurtenbach.
Yeah.
And Kamala walks up to the mic because she was going to speak first. And the PA announcer instead says, welcome Heather Kurtenbach.
It's like announcing the wrong batter coming up to the plate. Yeah. Right? And she blew it off, but it was like a scene out of Veep. It was such a funny show.
Yeah.
FM Talk 106.5. And we've got news on the way. And, of course, then Jeff Poore.